Hi.
New York, New York, 10036. Pro country.
What you see is what you get.
Hell has no fury. He drives the most expensive car because second best never enters his mind.
Of all the billions of planets in space, only one is off limits to man.
It all began with a curse.
The evil you did this day will be avenged.
A curse.
From the mists of infinity, they come, rising from the cold, damp earth to take what is now theirs.
You are in a room filled with your friends, but they are all dead.
Night, when the earth is quiet, and the good people of the world are sleeping, the night visitor comes to call.
The streets have been taken over by thieves, dope addicts, rapists, muggers. We live in fear. One man is doing something about it.
These are the sounds of 6 feet of silver death.
Grindhouse Purgatory, 42nd Street, Pete.
42nd Street is upon us again. 42nd Street Pete is here. I am Josh Hadley, and it is the purgatory of the Grindhouse. How you doing this week, Pete?
Oh, not bad, but before we get into anything, I want to send my condolences to the family of Joe Fleischer, Troma's biggest star, quote-unquote. Joe was in a lot of the Troma films, Toxic Avenger, Class of Nukem High. Joe actually did weigh 500 pounds, and unfortunately he passed away, I believe it was yesterday, so... Again, rest in peace, Joe. Had a lot of fun with him at conventions and other events. And unfortunately, I hadn't seen him in years. I'm no longer around that area, but I heard he wasn't doing too good health-wise. So again, you know, my best to his family and friends.
Same. I remember seeing him in so many Troma movies and so many Troma extras. He always looked like he was having a ball.
Oh, yeah, he did. He did. He was a lot of fun to hang around with.
Well, that actually will kind of... That actually will kind of seg into our topic. I want to talk about how the Grindhouse filmmakers and the Grindhouse fans, I mean, people like you, Pete, you're not young. You're getting up there in age. A lot of the Grindhouse filmmakers are passing on. The actors are passing on. It seems like very soon the Grindhouse, as it was, is kind of going to be a lost art. I mean, we're right now, Pete, in an era where when the new Ghostbusters remake comes out in a couple of months, the bulk of its audience were not even born when the real Ghostbusters came out.
Yeah, I know.
So I want to talk about kind of the loss and preservation of this era. I think that's why, like, the documentary you did and the Pieces DVD and whatnot is so important. Do you think that these people, the filmmakers and the fans, as they're passing on, they're leaving the proper legacy, or do you think the millennials are just going to walk all over them?
Well, see, what I see is happening, like, when we were talking before we went on the air about Grindhouse releasing. Now, there's your perfect example of people that are preserving the legacy the way it was, you know, meant to be preserved. You were talking about Pieces. There's a DVD extra on Pieces, Rise and Fall of America's Most Notorious Block, 42nd Street Memories, which I was a part of, and this thing had to be shot, God, close to 10 years ago. So I was still living in the area then. I've been up here 5 years. They shot it. I don't know, you know, I'm anywhere from 7 to 10, but what they did was they were, you know, roaming around getting, you know, different people. A lot of people you usually don't see on this DVD, and then, you know, they put this together, and they picked it up as an extra on the Pieces DVD. Also, I know that they are going to release I Drink Your Blood on Blu-ray, and they're going to pair it with the original co-feature, I Eat Your Skin, which is pretty much of a clunker, but, you know, it's cool to get that back. And, you know, as for the old-time directors, Bill Griffey, who I was hanging out with at Cinema Wasteland a couple months ago, he's one of the only guys alive that worked on I Eat Your Skin, which was actually, the working title was Voodoo Bloodbath, and it showed up on TV late at night as Zombies. So that's going to be, you know, the original co-feature back on. Plus, I'm sure they're going to come up with a lot of other cool stuff, too. But, you know, they're doing it the right way. Synapse is doing it the right way. Shout Factory is doing it the right way. But, you know, here's the thing. You think certain things will always be available. I couldn't find my copy of Alligator the other day because I'm doing something for Purgatory on it. And I looked on eBay figuring, all right, if I can score one for 10 bucks, it beats tearing the house apart. They're out of print. They're 50 bucks now. So certain things are going to slip through the cracks. And odds are, you know, some upstart company that I'm not going to mention on the air because I want to give them any fucking street cred might pick it up on the QT and put it back out. There's a lot of shady shit going on right now, but certain companies, like I say, are doing the right thing by it. But the problem is, and I'm going with a lot of the 40s and 50s and even 60s films are, guys my age were that target audience, you know, give or take 10 years in either direction. And sadly, you know, guys my age are dropping dead. That's the only blunt way to fucking put it. And it scares the shit out of me sometimes. But, you know, I got to figure, you know, a lot of us really didn't take care of ourselves. And, you know, along with, you know, the movies and shit, did a lot of heavy duty partying. So, you know, that all contributes to this shit. But, you know, Bill Grafe's 89 years old. Dave Friedman, before he passed, was in his late 80s. Ted Michaels is still with us. He's in his late 80s and still making films. Gary Kent and Bud Cardos, they're both in their 80s and they're still working. So, you know, a lot of these guys are still around. And, you know, my beef is, why aren't they at some of these conventions? And the answer is because they're not Sid Haig. They're not Bill Moseley. They're not the fucking flavor of the week or what's perceived as horror. You know, they're trying to push Sid Haig and Bill Moseley and trying to think who else was in the mix, Kane Hodder and somebody else as the icons of horror. You look at Sid Haig's career, prior to House of a Thousand Corpses, he did one fucking horror film, Spider Baby.
Well, yeah, so, Sid Haig's an exploitation guy.
Yeah, exactly. But he's not a horror film star.
He is now, because when I interviewed Sid Haig on Radiodrome, he brought up the fact that he sort of lamented that more people know him from being in a couple of Rob Zombie movies than the hundreds of films he did before that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I did a thing at this convention. I wish I had a copy of it. It would have been nice, but that's, you know, typical of whatever the fuck goes on with this business. I had to sit down one-on-one, Sid Haig, 50 years in film, and we had a great, great interview, and we stayed away from the Rob Zombie shit. So we opened it up to the public. You know what the first fucking question was? When are you going to do another Rob Zombie film? Fucking idiots.
Well, speaking of that, do you think that the new generation that's coming up on these films, like, I caught all of these films on late night television or when the VHS boom started in the early 80s. That's when I caught a lot of these movies. Do you think now these movies are getting their due on Netflix, on Hulu, or on all of these public domain Brentwood releases, $10 for 50 movies, and they're all beat to shit prints?
That's the same thing. You know what it is? It's the same thing they footballed around, but what, you know, happened is too, a lot of the public domain movies aren't public domain anymore, you know, much to people's chagrin, because some people have actually reached in there and pulled a few out and cleaned them up well. So, but yeah, the whole product's being hoarded out. I mean, you know, the whole MGM thing. Now you can buy four of them on one DVD for like, you know, $7.95 on Amazon. It's like anything else. I got on Netflix internet and I kicked it out because I have all those fucking movies on my shelf. I was looking for more current shit. And along with that, they had a bunch of shit I never fucking heard of. Well, this direct to DVD stuff. I went on Hulu. I had the free trial for 1 week. I basically watched everything I wanted to watch within the space of 1 week and canceled that fucking thing, too. There's nothing new there for me. You know, I have all these movies. I'm sitting there going, why the fuck do you do this? You have all these movies on your shelf. So, I don't do it anymore.
Do you think that, in a way, do you think that devalues the movies? And I know how much of a snobbish term that sounds, but do you think, like, me having to talk my dad into letting me stay up late at night to watch them or the Monolith Monsters at 3 a.m. on a school night on a local UHF channel, do you think that's why these movies mean more to me than I could just stream them anytime I want on Netflix? Yeah, has it sort of devalued it?
Yeah, it's the same thing to me. I used to, you know, okay, Attack of the Giant Leeches is going to be on 1 o'clock in the morning. Let me, well, parents are in bed, sneak downstairs, smack yourself in the face with a cold washcloth, tune it in, put the volume down real low. Yeah, it means a lot to me, but that's been my bitch too, that they, when I started seeing some of the MGM stuff in the fucking dollar store, that's when I knew the handwriting was on the wall, because the problem was, and this even goes back to porn, when you were dealing with VHS, the raw materials cost everybody the same fucking thing. So you just couldn't go under a certain price point or you'd be cutting your own throat. With DVDs, you know what blanks are. They're a fucking nickel. So basically with these companies, with their technology, what does it cost? And most of them get them replicated in Mexico now. What does it cost them actually to print a fucking DVD? Probably under a fucking dollar shipped. Way
but I mean, Pete, does it devalue the movies and what they're worth, quote? For instance, when Jason Cullum was making that Screaming in High Heels documentary on Linnea Quigley, Brink Stevens, Michelle Bauer, and, you know, the Scream Queen movement of the 80s, he said nobody wanted it. He made this documentary, and he was like, back in the 80s, you could sell a movie to HBO for 20, 30 grand. HBO offered him $2,000 in perpetuity. He's like, nobody wants this because the movie streaming, I think, has killed the physical value of movies. Everybody says, oh, it's opened it up to a whole new audience. Not really.
No, you know what the whole thing was? I'll give you this is what pisses me off, too, when I have this fight with friends of mine, why I don't do anything, why I don't, you know, go out. There's no place for me to go because my idea of fun was going to these second, you know, run shops. And going through bins of used VHS and magazines and, you know, DVDs now and shit. But that was my idea of a fucking fun. And, you know, going back in a day, when I used to go down around 42nd Street and shit, there was this place down by the Venus Theater called Beeline Books. They had piles and piles of stills and lobby cards and shit. You could just spend the day in there sifting through it. And you wouldn't even put a dent in the fucking store. But you'd find some fucking cool shit cheap. That's what I miss, and it ain't there anymore, because you're right. You can flick a button, and you see it streaming. But, you know, we never had that fucking prerogative, because you pick up the VHS, you only get, know what's written on the fucking box if you've never seen the movie. So you had to buy it, and you got stuck with sometimes a piece of shit. But it was fun doing it. To me, this isn't fun. There's a bunch of crap on Hulu. I mean, oh, there are old TV shows. Yeah, every old TV show is like on the Laugh fucking channel. Now Heroes, now all this. It's all being recycled back to broadcast TV because they get it for fucking cheap. And, you know, I can plug in my antenna and watch it for fucking nothing. So why would I want to pay for a fucking streaming service?
Well, on that note, do you think that TV not showing this stuff anymore is kind of wrecking it? And I know I'm just being an old man screaming at the clouds here, but like when I was talking to Joe Dante, he was complaining about how they don't show old movies on TV anymore. So like I brought up them and the Monolith Monsters. Those happened to be on TV one week late at night. Yeah. I'd never heard of these. I'm 8-10 years old. I'd never heard of these before.
Yeah.
Now you're not going to just stumble across this stuff anymore. Now you have to seek it out, or you're not going to just stumble across some cool old movie.
Yeah,
for instance, like Elvira. When I used to watch Elvira, I would have never chosen to watch most of the movies she put on her show. I was watching that for Elvira and whatever movie she happened to show.
Well, here's the thing. You know, there wasn't the proliferation of fucking total shit back then that there is now, because we had a hunt for this fucking shit because it wasn't around. And if it was around, it ran real late at night and you never knew what it was. There was no internet. All you had was monster magazines, and only a few of them to begin with, because monster magazines were taboo and they came out in the 50s. I remember getting my ass whipped for bringing one to school. So they were taboo. And the only one that really made any fucking sense was Famous Monsters of Filmland and Castle Frankenstein. The rest were like goofy things. They just portrayed it as goofy. But then you saw pictures of these things. And you said, oh, fuck, well, you know, that'd be cool. I wonder what movie this is. Then, you flip through the fucking channels when something you didn't know was on to see if that was the fucking monster movie. But now it's just, oh, hey, everything. That stuff, you know, today's audience is just too fucking low tech for them to watch. I remember a friend of mine's boyfriend, which was way younger than she was, couldn't watch black and white movies. He just couldn't do it.
I'm 41. My son was the same way. When he was in middle school, I'd get him up for school in the morning, and I had just picked up The Outer Limits on DVD, the original 60s show. So I was watching old Outer Limits, and he told me, He's like, the stories are fine, the acting's fine. He goes, God, I cannot watch black and white. That's just the generation he comes from.
Yeah, well, to me, black and white hides a multitude of sins. That's why they could pull off some of this stuff. And it didn't, you know, when they colorized some stuff, it looked fucking shitty. You know, look what they did in Night of the Living Dead. But, you know, you go back, everybody shits on Attack of the Giant Leeches. I had to rewatch it because of this thing I'm writing for the magazine. And I'm like, you know something? That is the first 50s monster movie that I can think of that actually showed the monster before the credits. Usually the monster showed up in the second reel. And it fucking worked for me. It was creepy and nasty, and it was some creepy fucking scenes in there. People shit all over it. Well, what the fuck? It was, you know, it was low tech. Same with the crab monsters. That's one of my all-time favorite black and white ones. Crab monsters, they fucking rip off people's heads and absorb their brains.
Well, do you think that there is an issue of preservation here? That,
oh, yeah.
That we're losing this entire era? Again, to go back to when I was interviewing Joe Dante, he's a trailer hound. You know that. He runs trailers from hell.
Right.
There are no known King Kong trailers in existence because nobody preserved them. A lot of these grindhouse movies, I hear them talk on the extras on the DVD. There's a reason that they don't have any trailers or promotional materials on the DVDs. Nobody has any anymore. Is it just we're so part of disposable culture that the grindhouse movies fell into disposable culture that...
No, well, you know what it is, and here's the thing, and I think, I don't know if I've said this before in a previous show, none of these guys, not a one of them, ever foresaw broadcast TV, home video, DVD, streaming. They never foresaw any of this stuff. They lived in the moment. It's, what can I make on this thing now? What can I make re-releasing it on a double bill? And then I got to store it. That was the whole thing. And I was lucky enough to talk to guys like Dave Friedman and a lot of other guys like that. Nick Phillips. They never, ever thought this shit was going to be worth anything past what they already have already done on it. And that's why the whole thing was, when Mike Vraney was releasing Dave's shit and Dave didn't know about it and Dave called him up and threatened to break his legs, Mike just said, Mr. Friedman, I'm so glad you called. I wanted to get a hold of you. I want to release your stuff. And that was one of the, you know, the best things that ever happened to the, you know, film world, because Dave just opened a bunch of doors for him. And, you know, yeah, it's like the interest was there then. I don't know what happened now, only certain stuff, but it's like, you know, some of these companies are dragging out shit. I just found 8 seconds of footage that shows an additional pubic hair. We'll put that on and that'll be our special edition, you know?
To go to the topic of preservation, you brought up, you know, hunting before, going on the VHS hunt and all that. And I'm a VHS collector myself. What a lot of people don't realize is, and this is what I write about in Fangoria magazine, for God's sake, less than half of everything released on VHS has a digital equivalent. And yet people just, like, Goodwill won't carry VHSs anymore. They just throw out VHSs that are given to them now. They don't even put them out on the shelf any longer. They're just throwing away who knows how many rare movies that nobody has ever heard of. My mom, I was going through my collection, and my mom was like, why do you keep all these tapes? Don't you have DVDs? And she just couldn't understand that these are not on DVD, Ma.
Yeah.
Pete, you don't know how many times on Radiodrome I have to physically take a picture of an old Fangoria or Starlog or Cinema Fantastique to back up something I say. People are like, oh, you know, that actor never did that. Nobody ever said that. And it's like, snap, snap. Because it doesn't show up on Google means it doesn't exist to them.
Yeah, exactly. Huh? It's fucked up. Well, you know, the other thing, too, is I don't know if we discussed this before, but I was talking. I don't know if you told me this or I was interviewing the woman who put out of print. They were taking all the 35mm films out of storage and dumping them in the fucking ocean.
Yeah, a bunch of the studios did that a while ago. They digitized everything, put them into a giant super hard drive, and then dumped the originals because they didn't need them anymore.
Yeah, and the thing is, from what I understand, digital media is breaking down now too. So,
exactly.
Nice fucking move. You know, the funny part, my standing joke is, and I know some, oddly enough, some of this VH stuff, H stuff has survived and is still playable, but you know, the even weirder thing is some of these films I got, you know, my own collection that, you know, go back to, you know, they got to go back to the 40s and 50s and shit, they're still surviving too. So what's the stronger medium? As long as you film, as long as you treat it right and run it, you know, and keep it lubricated, it holds up fine. I don't know. They were having a problem with fucking Blu-rays, I thought, too. Criterion or something had a problem with them.
Yeah, there's problems with all of these mediums. And in all honesty, my VHS is still run pretty decent. My Laserdiscs still run pretty good.
Yeah.
But there's also the whole part of this, the new generation. I don't know if you guys ever did this in the Grindhouse era. So bad it's good. People love to watch all these movies because, oh my God, this movie is so bad, it's amazing.
Oh, yeah. You know, there was a lot of them like that. I mean, here's one. You know, okay, they ran Night of the Living Dead as a co-feature on Last House on the Left. All right? This pissed me off because I was a huge Night of the Living Dead fan back then. Last House on the Left was so fucked up that people were actually laughing at Night of the Living Dead.
You get a lot of this today, though.
Yeah.
You get people that, like those Brentwood collections, you know, $10 for 50 movies, and people laugh at it. You look at it, all these reviews online by people that are 20, 25 years old, they're laughing their ass off at these movies that were really serious movies. Yeah, I don't personally prescribe to the so bad it's good philosophy. If your movie's bad, it's bad. And unfortunately, that gave birth to things like the Sharknado movies. Movies that are intentionally made to be as bad as possible because that's what people want. That's not how you should watch movies.
Well, there was a film, you know, this is another one, you know, this falls in a house, you know, Last Rites, where you could, you know, the vampires where there was like, you know, they're out in the daylight and you could see visible boom mics at the top of the screen and shit.
Yeah, but those are mistakes.
Yeah.
I'm talking about... But they're funny. Well, they're funny, yes.
Yeah.
But nowadays, people are making movies to be bad. They're making them because that's what the audience wants. Isn't that a dilution of what film should be when you intentionally make it as poorly as possible because that's the goal?
Well, here's the thing, and I don't really care who I piss off with this statement because I've already said it in print and I've already said it on stage and I've already said it at conventions. Just because your mommy gives you a fucking palm quarter for a Christmas present doesn't make you a filmmaker. Sorry. And that's what's happening because everybody who gets some kind of equipment, no matter how cheap it is, all of a sudden they're going out and shoot a movie. And, you know, nobody sends me stuff to review anymore because I won't review it. I won't look at it because I have not that much time left in my life and I'm not going to spend what I have left watching some fucking zombie piece of shit shot on a fucking hard drive. Sorry. That pisses people off too fucking bad, but that's what's happening. Everybody's a filmmaker. No, you're not. It's an art to be a filmmaker. You know, guys like John Carpenter, George Romero, Wes Craven, Ted Michaels, all these guys, they were artists. You know, you may mock their films, you may crap on some of the stuff they did, like Al Adams and stuff like that. But hey, they did something, they got it out, and they got it up on the big screen, and that's where it fucking counts. Because people can say anything they want about me, but I will tell you, and this is a fact, and you can look it up, that shitty documentary I was in about Chiller Theater played in a fucking theater in New York for a week up against... What the hell was it? Team America and outdrew Team America every night and would have done better if the playoffs weren't fucking running that week. But yeah, that's the whole trick. When your shit's up on the fucking big screen and people are paying to see it, then you made it. As little as it is, as bad as it is, whatever, then you made it. Not something that's shot on a fucking hard drive.
Pete, pimp the magazine a little bit. You keep mentioning you're doing something for the magazine. That would be Grindhouse Purgatory, right?
Yes, Grindhouse Purgatory, number 7, is available on Amazon. It's got a really whacked out 50s Nazi fucking torture cover from, you know, taken from a men's magazine. We have, you know, War is Swell, a bunch of overview of exploitation, war movies. A lot of good stuff in there. Different, some, you know, profiles on some actors and things. We got an eclectic bunch putting in there. Mike Accomando from Dreadful Pleasures put a piece in there, too. He's coming back to writing. So it's all good. You know, like I said, get it on Amazon.com. You can get it from me, 40deuce. Email me at 40deuce@hotmail.com, and I'll tell you where to send, you know, the $8 postpaid. That's where I'm at with that. Plus, we're looking for a distributor for this film I was involved in called Pollen. It's going to start hitting the film festivals, and... Well, we'll see what happens. But if you see a film called Pollen near a film festival, I'm in it. It's pretty fucked up. So what the hell? You be the judge.
This has been a 1201 Beyond production. Find it and other great content at 1201beyond.com.